Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
What's going on, Millionaire Mindcast fam? Welcome into today's episode. Today was a fun one. You guys are really going to enjoy this episode. This is from somebody that you have no clue whatsoever who he is, and that is exactly why you need to listen to this episode. He's not your guru. He doesn't have hundreds of thousands of followers, but man, this dude is somebody that I got a lot of respect for. He has built and amassed a significant amount of wealth that anybody would love to have, but most importantly, he's got a level of humility that makes him extremely special, and I think that's a big piece of why he is so successful. Today was a masterclass on humility, on curiosity, and how that as an entrepreneur or as a business owner or as just somebody who's looking to achieve great success, whether that's financial, whether that's with your family, whether that is with your employees or your community. This guy embodies a lot of characteristics and qualities that I personally am, you know, trying to model in my own life and on my own journey, and I feel like has helped me in a lot of ways, but just an extreme amount of wisdom in today's episode with my man, Tom Hoban. Tom is somebody who's built and created a lot of wealth in the real estate sector, and then him and his brother essentially formed a family office, which is basically a high net worth vehicle, you know, that helps manage and diversify your wealth and your assets. But he is somebody that really had shared some really great insights in terms of his entrepreneurial journey and things that have served him well, talking about certain skill sets, certain mindsets, how they have, you know, overcome fear and just that classic immigrant entrepreneur, you know, hard work success story. And, you know, following the breadcrumbs of the path that he's been on, I think there's going to be a lot of little nuggets in there that you guys are going to enjoy that will serve you well in your journey. I know I had a ton of notes. If you're new to the Millionaire Mindcast, welcome. As always, shoot me a text, 844-447-1555. If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to say what up, you can text me at that number, 844-447-1555. Know that all the links, all the freebies, all the downloads that we have available for our Millionaire Mindcast listeners that are at millionairemindcast.com, any of the show notes and specific stuff that we talked about in today's episode is at millionairemindcast.com for Tom's episode. So be sure to check that out. With that being said, if you guys enjoy these podcasts, this show, if there's any kind of value for you, the one way that you could help me show that exchange of value is by either sharing this with a friend, a family member on your social media, or leave a review in whatever podcasting platform you enjoy listening to this content on, so that way we can help organically reach and share it to more people to help them on their wealth building journey, unlocking their definition of a rich life, knowing that everybody has a different definition of what living a rich, wealthy, healthy, happy life looks like. We bring guests like Tom on to have those kind of conversations so that way you can pick and pull things that really align and feel congruent with you, your journey, your beliefs, your core values. So if you can help us spread that message, it is greatly appreciated. I'm excited for this interview. So I think you guys are really going to have some fun with this one. Get your pen, your paper handy, and know that Tom is one of these individuals that genuinely just wants to add value and help with absolutely nothing in return. He doesn't have a book to sell. He doesn't have, you know, a website or a podcast, anything that he is looking for you to go and get outside of just being better yourself. So with that being said, let's dig into today's episode without any further ado, right after this quick message from today's show sponsor. Hey guys, Matty A here, and today I'd like to talk to you about My Outdesk, the highest rated virtual assistant company in the marketplace. And if you're an entrepreneur and you're scaling a company, you know you can only do that through quality people and team members. And my buddy Daniel Ramsey at My Outdesk helps entrepreneurs and businesses do exactly that while buying back their time. And Daniel and his team at My Outdesk typically help businesses in these four key areas: sales, marketing, admin, and customer support. And I personally have known and worked with Daniel for almost a decade now, which has been a game changer for my business. And My Outdesk has over 500 verified five-star reviews with 13 years of experience serving over 6 1,000 clients with their amazing VAs. And recently, Daniel wrote a book, Scaling Your Business with Virtual Professionals, that you can purchase this book on Amazon. But for the Millionaire Mindcast family, Daniel and I struck a deal. And if you want to get this book completely free, all you have to do is text the word Matty A to 31996. Let me repeat, that's Matty A to 31996. And let me tell you, this book has everything you need to run a successful virtual business and a fully remote global team, which in today's landscape is more powerful and needed now than ever. You can grab that free copy by texting the word Matty A to 31996. Well, I'm excited to welcome in my man, Mr. Tom Hoban, into the show today. How are we doing, brother?
Awesome. Great to be with you, Matt. Thanks.
You know, I was going to say, you're definitely doing a lot better than me based on the view that I'm looking at here in your home office, right on the water.
That's the kind of grayish Puget Sound here today. I thought you were going to say something about my haircut.
So hey, I mean, the haircut is looking damn good too, man.
This is
I'll say that.
This is what cutting your hair at home during COVID looks like after a while. I get this far. How do you do it? I get this far and I get afraid. I can't do the rest.
Hey, you and I, you know, you're going for the clean cut. I've just been letting it go. Usually I've been always a high and tight kind of guy. And I said, if there was a year that I had an excuse not to cut my damn hair, it's going to be this year. So I went with it.
Awesome.
Well, I'm excited to dig in and catch up with you. For those of you who aren't familiar with Tom, it's because he doesn't put himself out there a lot. And those are the people that I'm always most intrigued by because, we get a lot of these gurus, a lot of these people that, you know, are very knowledgeable on topics through reading books and listening to podcasts, right? But then there's the other individual who does all of those same things, but actually lives it and has experienced it. And so I'm really excited to have you on the show today, sharing your experiences and your journey. A lot of success over the years, and I know a lot of people are going to gain some great value and wisdom from our conversation here today, and just learning more about you and how great of a guy you are. With that being said, you know, for those that don't know, who is Tom Hoban? You know, where did your entrepreneurial and wealth building journey start, Tom?
Probably, you know, like everybody, something in my childhood shaped it. Oldest of three, so I have a younger sister, younger brother. My brother's been my business partner since we got this crazy idea to start a property management company in, you know, our 20s with a, you know, $1,200, a plunger and a pickup truck and, you know, college degrees. And I've been on this kind of personal journey lately as I've kind of transitioned in as we built our family office and some other things to really think hard about these answers. Why? What's the why? Because my own kids and some of the younger people I work with are asking me these questions a lot, and I better have good answers,
right?
You know, whipping it out. So I think the short answer is, you know, people in high school, I went to big public kind of a blue collar town high school. And for whatever reason, they would say, well, you know, you got natural leadership skills. And I just started to believe them after a while. I don't know what that means. But, you know, then you get voted captain of your baseball team or something happens and then you get into a decent college. And I said, well, maybe I am that. And that's all it really was. It wasn't that I thought anything of myself. And, you know, my parents loved us and treated us well. I was the oldest, so I thought a little bit like a leader. But it wasn't until I got to college and got an experience to get some exposure to true, humble servant leadership, which is sort of the model of kind of bought into that it really started to sink in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I call it the likability formula. You know, I started thinking, well, I asked this of a lot of my mentors. You know, I was getting into rooms and conversations with people that I definitely didn't earn the right to be in yet. And I kept, you know, really trying to dissect, like, what value am I bringing? Why am I in proximity to these conversations, these opportunities, these individuals, and these leaders, you know, that key word. And the most common answer I got was, we just like you, Matty. Like, you're just a likable dude. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? Right. And I thought about it. And for me, when I'm around people, and I already see it in you, I think people who are aware of that, recognize that in other people as well. And I think this is something anybody can, you know, cultivate in their own life through a little bit more awareness, is there's this sense of, you said, humble servant leader, right? So this humility that individuals kind of exemplify, there's also this work ethic of just whatever has to get done, we get done no matter what. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll roll my mm-hmm. sleeves up. And then, you know, there's also this confidence in terms of not necessarily cockiness, but confidence like who I am. Hey, I may not know it, but I'll figure it out, right? There's just this confidence in their character that you kind of pair all those things together and, you know, somebody who's consistently looking to add value, and it makes that person a pretty damn likable human being, right? And so I see that in you, and I'm curious, is that something that you cultivated over time? Is it something that was just, you felt was natural to you? Was it from a dad or a family member, or where did that come from?
Yeah. We're Irish Catholic. My mom's got some Norwegian blood. So I have this stoicism from our mom's side and then this storytelling ability from my dad, you know, on the other side. So the two seem to sort of match up somehow, but yeah. And I suppose, you know, maybe that's what charisma is. Maybe, you know, some people have maybe more of it than others. I've come to appreciate in recent years that I also didn't really have much of a ceiling anywhere. Whatever I thought maybe I could be, there wasn't anyone around me telling me I couldn't. The world wasn't telling me I couldn't. And so I think some of that is just the good fortune of being, you know, American at a certain time in history, and maybe how I was made up, which has, you know, led to some of the work we're doing today to make sure that the people who are born into different circumstances can start to see themselves the same way that I was lucky enough to do it. So there weren't a lot of barriers, but it wasn't really, honestly, till I got to college, where now I went to Notre Dame, and I, you know, came from this public school where, you know, I didn't do any homework and I got straight A's. Wasn't that hard? And it wasn't because I was gifted. I thought I was, you know, right? I had this charisma, this leader kid, all this stuff. And then I get to college, and I mean, I'm in there with the football team and all of the remedial math and all the help I could get to just barely maybe get out of school with a degree. And then, of course, business, as you know, you can have a lot of these sort of personality traits that draw people to you. But there's, you know, there's only one solution to success in business, and either customers want it or they don't. Right. It either works or it doesn't. And so I've had to figure out what else are you made of, right? You can't just be that. You have to be bigger than just, a salesman or winning a deal or making friends quickly and all that. I thought when I was young, that was probably enough, but it wasn't until I actually started putting ourselves out as young businessmen, my brother and me, that we realized, boy, you got to have a lot to be able to succeed business. So that started to shape things a little differently.
Were you guys first generation entrepreneurs in your family?
Yeah. So I would say we have entrepreneurial parents, but we're the classic American immigrant story. You know, my great grandparents on both sides were the first ones in from Norway and Ireland, and, you know, our Irish side, you know, worked the railroads, of course, you know, and all the way out to kind of Seattle area. And then they, you know, you hit the ocean and you're done working if you work on the railroads.
Right.
And this is where they landed. You know, my grandpa's mom died in childbirth, and, you know, he, the whole just classic, you know. And then my dad's and my mom are the first gen college, you know, grads and their families, and, you know, piece that together. And then here we are. So, you know, we were building on some sort of ideas there. But yeah, for sure. When I say we started with $1,200, a plunger, a pickup truck, and a couple of college degrees, I mean, that was it. And I went through most of my college years on an ROTC scholarship, Navy Marine Corps, and then I opted out. At that time, you could kind of feel it out for a couple of years and then decide. And the summer I was trying to decide, I wound up on a commercial salmon fishing boat, kind of the thing a scrappy kid from the Northwest would probably find himself doing, because it's supposedly a lot of money in it. And we actually did hit a lot of fish, enough to pay for school. So I opted out of the military. I was able to finish school without any debt, fortunately, which is a lot tougher for kids today. But yeah, all that stuff shapes it one way or another. And then, as you know, there's nothing like getting your ass kicked a few times, right?
Yes. Yes, that definitely builds, when I look back on my own journey and you know, my greatest lessons or ahas or whatever you want to call it, breakthroughs. I'm always, you know, I'm always trying to think of what ceilings were hanging over me and how I kind of broke through those and made them, you know, kind of my new floor, my new normal, or hey, whatever comes at me, I'm going to handle it. And it was always my greatest failures, right? It was the biggest blows to the gut. It was the biggest, you know, financial hardships. It was the biggest, you know, seasons of doubt and, you know, struggle. It was never when I was, you know, riding high, right? And so when I think about it in terms of, you know, fear, because that's what ultimately stops a lot of people from just taking action is these fears of the unknown and the uncertainty. And, you know, obviously the greatest way of creating more predictability in your life is just consistently taking action, right? And being in control, whether you're getting your ass kicked or not, you know, do the thing that you fear and the death of fear is certain, right? I'm curious, you know, as you were first starting out on your own entrepreneurial journey, knowing that there's a lot of listeners who are there, maybe they're trying to get to that next level of income or wealth. You know, what's your psychology and how have you always processed and handled fear as it shows up in your life?
God, what a great question. You're in my sweet spot there.
There we go.
Well, first of all, I have an answer. Fear is an underrated emotion. It really is when there's a great book called Sapiens that I recently read. That really dives into sort of our human genome and how we're made. And basically we're still wired to run from cougars and lions. You know, that's kind of the human, we're supposed to be afraid of stuff.
Right.
Right. We're not supposed to be frozen by it. So what I at some point had to kind of figure out is, well, am I just going to be afraid of stuff all the time? Afraid of failure, afraid of, you know, really, we're all trying to do all this so that we have some sense of safety and security in this world, right? What does that look like to me? And you know, it wasn't probably until I started to understand how to measure risk. When you can move that fear from fear of the unknown to some, you know, breaking it down into its parts and using some informal logic and maybe even tap into that little math brain of ours and figure out a way to go, well, now I've got the risk fairly well measured, right? So is the return or the benefit worth it? So I'm having these discussions with one. So we have two boys and a girl, they're 20s. Our oldest son, 28, second son, 26, and their baby sister who grew up, you know, wrestling and playing in the mud and, you know, she's a scrapper.
Love it.
She doesn't get this, right? So she likes to bungee jump and she likes to, you know, parachute from airplanes and she likes to do stuff like this. So I finally broke through and I said, you should be afraid of some stuff and you should measure the risk and return. Like, was the thrill of jumping out of an airplane worth the risks that this is the one day that the guy you're jumping with, you know,
doesn't back his
shoot with a bad attitude, right? So I think it's moving from that fear to, you know, really risk management and then measuring that against, you know, the opportunities in front of us in every area of life, right? Whether you're thinking about getting married or you're thinking about buying a house or making a business decision, it's really still just a risk and return equation.
That's a really important point, I think, that a lot of people overlook in terms of just critically thinking in general, right? Because nobody's exempt from fear. For me, I've learned to, as it shows up in my life, kind of change the way I engage in the conversation with fear. Because every time I lean into the fear and I get to the other side and I look back, I'm still whole. You know, my wife still loves me. My kids still think I'm a cool dude right now, at least right now. That might change. But when you get through enough of those scenarios of fear, that fear overcomes, starts to turn and compound into confidence, right? And I think, like you said, not a lot of people have the awareness to stop and really weigh out these things instead of making it such an emotional decision or a reaction. It becomes more of a logical and a calculated decision, which obviously, and you know this better than anybody in the investing world, is critical, right? It could be the difference in having a profitable, you know, return on your investment or having something, you know, go to zero and losing money. So I love that you brought that up because I think it's a framework that, you know, people overlook, you know, too often. And, you know, in terms of your, you know, entrepreneurial journey, when did you feel like it was time to really start taking some big risks as well as, you know, how do you discern against what you put your time or your money into in terms of that risk reward scenario, whether it's growing your business, doing a new investment?
Well, the answer on the big risk is never. I'm afraid of other people's money. I was as a kid. It was the only thing that kind of was tense in the house. You know, my folks would worry about their mortgage, and it was built into me. I've learned to get more comfortable that you actually serve each other when you bring other people's money into your ventures. But big risk scared me. And I really built a life and a model in our businesses, my brother and me, around hitting singles and doubles. And I think it hit me about, Matt, where you are in life. How old are your kids now?
Ella is 6 years old and Evelyn is 3.
Okay, so I'm 58, right? So I'm about at your stage in life. And all these other ladies and gentlemen that signed up for Microsoft my age, They're done, right? They've already hit it big and they're ready to just go whatever they're going to do, right?
Right.
And so my brother, like, God, we're just grinding out in this real estate business. What are we doing? We blew it. You know, we should have gone out with Microsoft. And then my brother just looks at me casually. He says, really, how would your life change? Because you're not going to leave your wife and leave your kids and go to the beach. You're going to keep going to the same school you're going, you know, the whole deal, right?
Right.
And so like, yeah, maybe really, really, it's kind of more of a stage of life question for us. It'd be great to hit it big and have all that security earlier. But with the risk of that, when it's really not going to benefit me that much until I'm probably paying for college or, you know, trying to do some other big things. So it just gave us this comfort that we could just kind of stay in this sort of singles and doubles mode. What's the risk? The good news about singles and doubles is it's usually a surer bet, right?
Yeah.
The downside risk is lower. So in our case, we just kind of decided to stay, you know, property management. Let's just buy multi-tenant buildings for a while. And then, oh boy, let's just get exclusively into apartments. And instead of develop them, let's just buy existing stuff and manage it better because we know how to do that. If you think about the psychology of all that, it was just all low risk, modest return, singles and doubles. You could probably call us the boring husband fund. Maybe that's the blue collar background, Matt, right?
Well, it's interesting.
Wake up with the lunch pail and go to work.
But you know what's interesting, Tom, is when I think about some of the most successful people over, you know, one of my mentors taught me wealth is just, it's built with small, smart, consistent choices over an extended period of time, and it compounds into something big, right? Start small, turns out big. A lot of little things done right end up being something big that looks really great, you know, in hindsight. But, you know, wealth is created, and really all the best things, I think, are created in the crock pot. I would say like the crock pot over the microwave. And, you know, I'm a millennial. I pace in front of the microwave. I want my stuff fast. But when you think about all of the greatest things in life, not only is the end result usually created in that crockpot mentality, but it's also like what you learn in the process that is even sometimes more valuable, I think, instead of getting that quick hit or that lightning in a bottle or whatever it may be, right?
Well, and I think too, you know, there are different ways to make a living now. You know, obviously technology and the internet and internet of everything, and you know, there are ways for young people, especially with the cutting edge of those skills and ideas, really, you know, bring a lot of value to the markets and in many ways and do really, really well. It's a crapshoot, but, you know, there's a lot of ways to, you know, do really well early in life that weren't there 20, 30 years ago. Right. But I'm trying to remember we're going to buy an apartment building. The first one we're going to buy, probably late 90s. And I went to one of our property management clients. I had a little extra money. He said, well, if you ever decide to buy something, I'll go in with you. So I sit down with him. And I mean, this thing's locked up. I'm going to escrow in this thing. And this guy's, you know, solid. I've known him for a while. You know? And I go in there, have him sign some wired papers or whatnot. And he says, I can't do it. And what are you talking about? He says, I got to bail out. I'm just a hunch. And I go, what? He says, everything you've done has pretty much gone your way, right? I go, yeah. I thought that was a good thing, right? I want you to come back. I will be your most consistent investor in everything you do. I want you to come back after you've had your ass kicked 3 times. And I had no idea what that meant. Within 3 years, I'd had my ass kicked at least 3 times, right? And I came back and sure enough, he was there. He goes, you see what I mean? So this idea of shaping our decisions around this kind of risk and return concept and everything, what he was teaching me and what I have to share this in this kind of environment is you have a lot of blind spots when you're young. There are a lot of great ways to make a lot of money when you're young, but we just have to know that we don't have wisdom yet, right?
Yeah.
And really what wisdom is just a series of those ass kickings that tell you where the blind spots were that you didn't have, and they're not blind spots anymore, right? Yeah. And that happens in interpersonal relationships and, you know, you're at the front end of your first year in high school or college and you don't know what's going on. By the time you're done, you think you own the place, right?
Right.
That's just life, right? And that's because you kind of work through all these blind spots. So, you know, I'm lucky because my brother Sean is really the, you know, remarkable one of the two Hoban brothers. Trust me on that.
Yeah, man, we got to get him on the show.
Yeah. He just lives a couple doors down here. We'll go pull him in. But he's got a pretty good kind of head for this sort of stuff. And you know, building a natural curiosity helps you reduce those blind spots. And he's that guy. You know, I've got that in certain areas that maybe you and I might directly relate to, right? I'm very people focused in that curiosity. I wonder what that guy's thinking. I wonder if he wants to be a customer of mine or, you know, I wonder if that guy wants to, what's he, you know, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Very people driven. His is just a deep curiosity about how things work, reads books, you know, pours over all kinds of stuff. That curiosity might be the trait that younger people maybe have to really do a gut check on if they're going to be early entrepreneurs and expect success.
Yeah.
Am I curious enough to really want to hunt down all my blind sides best I can, talking to people, surrounding myself with wisdom, all that kind of thing, so that I reduce my risk? And I think that's kind of a big gut check. I wish I had done more of it when I was younger.
I think that's an extremely important thing for whether you're an early stage entrepreneur, or really just anybody in general that's trying to excel to the next level. Because there are levels to life, to business, to wealth, to relationships, right? And every level has, you know, kind of a different boss that you have to beat, right? And you got to learn all the blind spots and all the hurdles and all the challenges that go along with each level. And the word that comes to mind, which is what you said earlier, is, you know, this, if you are curious and you tie the humility with that curiosity, you stay in a constant state of learning and growth. And I know that has, you know, served me well, because when I wasn't that, right, and I thought I was hot shit walking in there and I'd made, you know, a couple $100,000 and da 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 da, right? And then I got my ass really handed to me. Those moments of humility, they really teach you a lot, right? And it does help you navigate the game of life or the game of business, maybe a little bit more intentionally or purposefully, knowing that you don't know it all. I always tell people, like, hey, I'm not the smartest, I'm not the fastest, I'm not the strongest, but I'm really good at asking good questions. I'm really good at learning and implementing. And I'm really good at just surrounding myself with people who are way smarter, faster, and stronger than me in the areas that I'm not, right? And that can kind of help accelerate figuring out what those gaps are, what those blind spots are, shortening learning curves or avoiding mistakes or whatever it may be.
There's a lot in what you said there, man. You got a lot of wisdom early in life that impresses me because of that humility. Humility and curiosity are come from the same place, right?
Yeah.
If we're humble, we know we don't know everything. So that makes us curious because we want things, right? Yeah. If you're not, maybe that's where the charisma sometimes comes from, right? You can smell that on people.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we might have some answers and we're happy to share them but really, you know, we have to be humble enough to know that. And plus, how could you not be? How could you think that everything you've done in your life makes you so much more wise than everybody else? You know, we're just these little specks down here running around. I can only know what I know, right?
That's so true.
It's just, in fact, that curiosity, that humility tied to curiosity is what enriches your life too, right?
Yes.
If you think about the people that are in your life, if you weren't curious about them because you have a natural humility, think, well, maybe they have something interesting to offer me, right? Some of the most dynamic, strange, cool, meaningful best friends in your life, right? Relationships in your life come because you're curious, right? Yep. And that starts with humility.
Yeah.
I write that down in my journal. I started journaling about a year or two ago. I went on this 4-day Jesuit men's retreat.
Nice.
And I signed up for it out of town because I wanted to go away.
There we go.
And I didn't want to see anybody I knew. I really wanted to be anonymous and all that kind of cool stuff. But I didn't notice on the side that it was silent.
Oh, this was a silent retreat.
Oh yeah. 4 days of silence and reading and going through the spiritual exercises, all this cool stuff. But boy, you just walk out of there praying every day for humility to realize just, you know, how important it is that we hold that quality to us, even in those days when I got the deal, got this done, those are great moments. But humility is the one that probably drives all of us through our successes, helps us recover from failure. My dad would say it's our Irish blood that helped us recover, because about the only thing he said when we started our business, I got to tell you the story. He says, I don't know if you guys are going to make it. Nobody in our family's ever really gone out and started something like that and made it work, you know. But you got one thing going for you. You're Irish. And the Irish always get up quick after they get their ass kicked and get right back into the fight.
I love that. I love that.
Really talking about humility.
Just yeah.
Head down. Keep going.
Your pops had some wisdom. That's for damn sure. You know, it's interesting. I was at a men's retreat here a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking with some guys, and they were asking me, something that has served me over the last couple of years in terms of kind of accelerating to, where I find myself at today. And, I was thinking about it, and a lot of it is, what you and I have been talking about, but you said something that quick to get back up. And I think about in terms of velocity decision-making. Yes, you want to be calculated, but not overthink things and then procrastinate and then not take any action at all. And for me, I don't know if this is, going to serve somebody or not. So take this with a grain of salt. But I was thinking about this in terms of velocity decision-making of, I make decisions really quickly once I've kind of gone through my framework of like, what boxes do I need to check? What analysis and underwriting do I need to do? You talked about risk and reward. And once I make that decision, I make it very quickly. And then I receive the feedback very quickly and I process that. And a lot of them are, they're wrong choices. They're not the right choices. But because of my framework, it allows me to at least not do anything too catastrophic, get quick feedback. And then, like you said, just get back up quickly, right? And get back in the trenches, use what feedback you got, reflect, learn, grow, and make another quick decision and you do that enough, you're going to have a shitload of data points up on the board to start connecting dots and start seeing a path that, might serve you in achieving what goals you're trying to accomplish. Is that something that you guys kind of saw and experienced in your journey over the years in business?
Yeah. I've actually learned a lot about that from two people, my brother, business partner, Sean, who's a remarkable decision makers. And then one of my sons, who is a real good athlete and just had a remarkable ability. The one that went to Santa Clara that we were talking about before the show.
Yeah.
He was above average, physically and all that stuff, but he just had a remarkable ability to process when bad things happen and make corrections very quickly and go. So, in basketball, you're playing offense and defense all the time. Everything's moving really fast and all that stuff. And I would watch him in all the sports he played. He was very, very good at that. He didn't wallow in losses. He didn't dwell on failures, because in those environments, you really can't, right? You got to turn right around and now you're on defense, right? So, one of the graces that I've gotten from him and from my brother in this decision-making, which you lay out very well, I think that's a really good way, because sometimes we don't have a choice. We just have to make lots of decisions really fast.
But right.
The most information we can get, right, is you come up with a very good process that you can rely on, right? Data points in, filter system that includes some of your values, right? So that, you can throw stuff out that doesn't work and then run through and make a decision and then live with the results. That's the thing. Live with the results. I thought I played a really good game. I made good adjustments, but we still lost the game. That's okay. I can make some more adjustments and next time. And over time, then we become, then we have wisdom, right? That's why Tom Brady's winning football games at 42 or 3.
Such a stud.
He's not very fast.
No, he's not.
He just has a lot of wisdom, right?
Yep.
And now those data points and decision-making processes that you just described that you're deploying with some success, and you're forgiving yourself for the failures that just happen. Not every decision I make is going to work out. Over time, they just become instinct, right?
Yeah.
So that's that habit becoming really part of sort of who you are now. So now you'll see things. I have this problem now trying to teach some of these sort of outside guy kind of salesy skills to some of our younger people and go, well, that's obvious, isn't it? Well, no, yeah, I've been doing it for a long time. Things that just seem like, well, of course you do this and make that movement, just are tough. And you're probably in that sweet spot in your own career now, right? Where you kind of see, like, I've got chunks of wisdom over here. I can feel that. Like, this one I know the answer to before this guy finishes talking, right?
Right.
And, oh, but I got a blind spot over here. I need to work on that.
Big time. Yep. They come up every day. And I think it just comes back to just, like you said, you know, checking your ego at the door and trying to stay as aware as I possibly can. Because when I'm aware and I'm not on autopilot, then I'm at least giving myself a chance to go in and do the work. And that's, you know, I think something that unfortunately, because of the crazy busy world that we live in and the responsibilities and the pressure that people feel, they lose that awareness, right? And then one day turns into a week, into a month, into a year, and oh shit, I haven't moved the needle forward on my goals, or I haven't done this, or I haven't done that. So I love what you said of kind of like that short-term memory in terms of, you know, entrepreneurial amnesia. Hey, if you fail, let it go, man. Just get back to the basics and doing what you need to do. And obviously having the right people in your corner is really important. So I'm curious in terms of, I know you're big on generational wealth. You know, that's something that's important to you guys, and you've created the family office, and you guys have all kinds of amazing investments, and you're not only trying to grow, you know, the wealth, but the impact that your wealth, and that's why I love, you know, I think money makes people more of who they already are. And so just knowing who you are and kind of what you stand for and how you operate, I know you're going to do, you are and are going to continue doing amazing things with the wealth that you guys create. You know, why did you guys decide to do the family office, and, you know, what are the goals and the vision? You know, when does enough become enough? I always love kind of getting and understanding the psychology of why people continue down their path, even though they've amassed, you know, amazing and great things.
Yeah, it's a great question. We've been kind of punching above our weight, or at least we think we have been, you know, most of our careers.
That's the Irish in you, man.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. We have some humility. We have some curiosity, right? So, you know, we had with lots of amazing people. I mean, if we have one thing going for us, it's, you know, the ability to draw amazing human beings to come choose to just be on this journey with us. And we're generous, you know, when they want to give us their franchise years and come and play ball, and we're excited about it. We treat them like family because we don't know any other model to, you know, we're family. And so we just think that's how partners work. And so it actually wasn't a number that we had in mind where when we get to this, then we have this, you know, exit, or we have this event, and then now we're done, right? I think it evolved. We started bringing in, you know, people to partner with us and come along and work alongside of us. In some cases, you have to look like you're a sustainable business. And so they're 10, 15, 20 years our junior. And then who are we to cash out all the chips and take them and run?
Right.
When we promised them a future. It just didn't make any sense. Like, that wouldn't be fair to them, right? They signed up, and we owe them our best effort. So then we started doing business with these family offices, and I didn't even know what one was. In fact, I think the closest before we were golfers. So this isn't to pick on people who are golfers, but closest I think I ever got to a country club as a kid was when I delivered manure to it on the landscape crew. You know, like, we shouldn't even think like that, you know? And when I was in college in Notre Dame, where you think the place would just be dripping with that, it was. But it took me a couple of years of living with, you know, kind of mostly athletes, because those are the guys that were in the tutoring classes I needed to be in to get through school. I just didn't get it. I didn't, you know, scrappy kid from the Northwest, if you don't catch fish or cut down a tree or make an airplane, you know, I don't understand it. So it probably wasn't until we started doing business with some family offices and realized this is a good model. Now you kind of have a single place, an entity where we can sit and we can manage these different businesses and our affairs and be thoughtful about it, both in service to the other people who signed up to get on this journey with us, because we owe them our best effort and some sustainability and visibility into that and all that, but to do some good. And like, okay, well, here we sit. So when we designed it, we really worked hard on a mission statement, which is kind of hard to do for a family. Family office's mission statements are usually kind of, let's do more of the same thing that made us wealthy, right? And if you look at ours at hopeandfamilyoffice.com, ours is to favorably influence the lives of a million souls. Now, that isn't to say that there's anything special about us. There isn't. But really, when we went inside of ourselves, so what are we trying to do here? That's what we're trying to do. You know, maybe we'll get to heaven, maybe we won't, right? But we're going to give it a good hard try while we're down here, trying to do a little bit of good. And if we're lucky enough to hit singles and doubles and get our ass kicked a bunch of times and grind through this, my brother dragging his older brother along on the journey, you know, if we somehow figure out a way to do it, well, we ought to try to keep doing good with it. So it morphed from a business that was about creating wealth and income for us to one that was a job creator and a wealth creator for others and all this platform. And then the family office evolved from that. Like, well, what platform does all those things really well, allows us to kind of broaden our mission out of just real estate or these sorts of things. And that's how it kind of evolved.
I love it. That's cool. Cause you know, obviously when people think family offices, they think, oh, it's just all about money. Right. And when you think about people tying in their mission and their core values, and it's something far beyond just serving them and their own family at that. I love hearing that. So, okay. For people that maybe go, all right, I understand kind of what a family office is, but how would you kind of characterize what a family office is and what that model is? And then maybe share a little bit about what you guys invest in and why you guys like investing in those things.
Well, clearly I'm not investing in
Barber, huh?
Very much. Like, I'm doing my own COVID cuts.
That's the millionaire next door, though, right?
I think I was telling you at the beginning of the show, I get about this high and then I panic. And I just anyway, yeah. So we did some homework on family offices. We'd known a couple, and then we joined a couple family office networks, and one in particular kind of family office club. It just started kind of pouring and hanging around these people and listening and seeing. And really what they are is kind of an asset aggregator, so you can have a conversation with the people who have, you know, some skin in that game. And me and my brother have done this. And, you know, we never talked really about this stuff at home with our kids. So, you know, they just thought we kind of had good jobs, you know, and enough to help, you know, maybe help out with college a little bit. So, you know, we needed a platform too to start to kind of say, well, look, you know, if we get hit by the bus tomorrow, you guys got some stuff going on here. We need to have, you know, some structure to it, maybe even a committee that does this and bring in, our attorney and our accountant to kind of help us over this. And so they're a great platform for managing wealth generally, especially when it has, in our case, you know, we'd be real estate heavy and, you know, and stock and securities light because we're real estate guys, we're junkies. Every time we get our hands on a little money, we go do some real estate stuff.
Yep.
Well, that's not a very healthy way. You have to have a more balance. So with some intention in kind of a family office, you can kind of do things like, well, let's decide what our risk profile is. Then let's balance our liquidity somehow and that kind of stuff. Other big things that they do is they really are a great platform to create deal flow. And this is something until we became a family office, I kind of had an idea about it. But and I know nobody told me what the minimum wealth level was to be one. So we just made ourselves a family office.
There we go.
Probably if there's a, you know, a minimum net worth in there, maybe we're just barely, you know, C team JV level. But we decided to do it because it created this deal flow environment just by calling yourself a family office. And so we sponsor our own real estate deals still, and we have a lot of investors we take care of there, but they're doing lots of interesting things. So we're kind of aware of those. And now we've got all this deal flow coming in from private equity deals and VC stuff. Some of the impact work we're doing in the Black community came to us because we're a family office and we do already some work in that space. And now we're working with some really cool investors that, you know, really would never know about our program, for example. that platform, the deal flow platform, probably the biggest advantage and biggest pleasant surprise from it all. The philanthropy's been great. You know, we've been able to create a model and get other people kind of looking at what we're doing there. But the deal flow environment, so we can start to balance things out and chase some stuff other than, you know, just a narrow zone of things that we understand, has been really terrific.
That's amazing. I love that. And you brought up something to me that I remember. I was in Steamboat, Colorado, and I was at one of my mentors, and he's a family office as well, and they got a couple hundred million in their group. And I think it was the wealth advisor. It was either to Bush or to Obama. It was one of the two. But he used this really cool analogy, and you said something that kind of sparked that thought in terms of, it's one thing to be Tom Brady and know how to run all the plays and who to throw the ball to, and but you have to also find a way to become the Bill Belichick, right? That at some point in time, your kids are going to be the ones to take that torch, right? And what, you know, you see a lot of people who either they win the lottery or they inherit a big trust from their family, and it just totally screws them up for life because they weren't taught the principles and, you know, the characteristics of what built that sustainable wealth and how to manage it and steward it appropriately. And so I know that this is something that's obviously important to you. You know, what do you say to people that want to build and grow their wealth, and, you know, they want to pass it on to their kids? You know, what should they be thinking about? What should they be doing? What should they be talking about with their kids?
Yeah. Yeah. Our situation was a little different because we really kind of kept work at work and didn't talk a lot of shop at the dinner table. And so our kids never grew up. It kind of came to us when they were a little older anyway. They grew up very humbly. We grew up in a kind of a very blue collar kind of neighborhood, kind of like we grew up in kind of a middle class area of the Puget Sound here north of Seattle, and raised them that way. And
that might be a good thing, man. I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. You know,
there was a point where things had gone well enough where we thought, well, of course, the natural progression, you know, is you pick up and you go down in Bill Gates' neighborhood or whatever, right? And we just said, no, that's kind of not us. And you know, we want these kids to grow up with that humility, not okay, manufactured, because they, you know, went and, you know, did a, you know, 3 weeks in some, you know, camp in the Philippines or something. You know, and we wanted, you know, you grow up in a little, you know, these a tough little town, and it's good for you, right? And yeah, and they still got great educations. We had access to all that. So ours is a little different. Yes, there is a reality that the natural transition of wealth goes from, you know, from one generation to the next. It's going to go that direction unless you do something intentional to change that plan, right? So there is that. Obviously, you have to have a platform to do all the, you know, estate planning work and tax planning that goes in. And that's all part of it. But one of my favorite lines is when we finally got this thing put together, we had some bones to it, and then we had our first family office meeting with our three kids and my brother's four and our wives. And I think we opened it with, okay, so here's what we've been doing the last 30 years. None of this is yours.
There we go.
I think I stole that from Tiger Woods. I think Tiger, when he was a kid, said, hey, Dad, we got a lot of money, don't we? And his dad says, I got a lot of money. You got nothing. Yeah. And look what he did, right?
Yeah.
So some of it's a little unusual in our case, but there is a reality there. And they have, to their credit, what we've done here is given them maybe a little more freedom as they started their career years, because this kind of happened all as they were going into college and things. So, you know, one of our sons was contemplating the priesthood for a while. That might have been a decision he wouldn't make if he was afraid and thought, oh, I better get out, figure out how to make, you know, 100 grand as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, their thinking around their career moves might be a little different, so that they can choose stuff that brings them a little more joy. You know, Sean and I grinded our way to this spot, but, you know, we've had our lives threatened and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff has happened along the way that you wouldn't wish upon your kids, right?
Yeah.
So I think we've used it that way. It's interesting. None of them want to be in the business. One of them works for us, but he's a corporate trainer. I mean, it's a job that's portable no matter what industry you're in, right?
Yep.
And one of them's kind of in real estate development with another company entirely. And then we have, you know, teachers and doctors and, you know, one of them's a mom of four kids. So it was not done with the intention of passing it to our children. That said, that is a reality. And the family office is a good platform to have those conversations so you can tell them what your intentions are and let them know what's going on. Because it is a responsibility, whether you like it or not, to be part of this, right? That responsibility they got wholly. And they were the ones that helped us shape this idea that we would try to go out and favorably influence souls rather than, you know, build some number.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, there are way too many people we've dealt with who inherited a lot of money who we would not want to be around much.
Yep. Yep. Well, Tom, I think that's a testament to you, your character, obviously your family core values, what you stand for. And if your kids are anything like you, man, or your family's anything like you, you got a pretty badass family. So
I want to be more like them. I'm learning from them all the time, but thank you.
That's amazing, man. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show today and just dropping some really golden nuggets. Guys, if you want to check out more about Tom, their family office, we'll put the links in the show notes at millionairemindcast.com for Tom's episode. So be sure to check that out. Tom, is there anything, you know, usually this is the point of the interview where somebody's offering some book or product or, you know, something like that. Is there anything that you want to leave the audience with? And it could just be, you know, a final thought.
Oh, it'd be a mistake to not, you know, acknowledge that we're doing this inside of this pandemic. And when we get out, let that love that's in us that wants to hug and bro hug and play pickup basketball and jog without a mat, we let it flow, let it go out. This world is going to need some healing. We're going to be dealing with PTSD after this. I'm dealing with it. Let that, you know, humbly acknowledge that we're a little bit busted up, right?
Yeah.
And let's just go love the heck out of each other, however we do that.
I love it. Tom Oben, appreciate you, man.
All right. See you, Matt. Thanks.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you did, all I ask is that you share it with somebody else who maybe needs to hear this today or that could gain some value from something that was talked about or discussed in today's interview. You just never know. One piece of information, a conversation, a tool, a resource can completely transform and change the trajectory of someone's life or their business. So if you get any kind of value or you want to support the show, all we ask is that you help us organically get this in front of more people. Also, for those of you who are really looking to accelerate your wealth building journey and unlock more financial freedom, get more time back and just level up your life, your business, your finances, be sure to head over to therichlifeacademy.com to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family, whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, courses from our guests, all kinds of free content, downloads, checklists, upcoming event info, and how you can connect with us live in person, all kinds of great valuable tools. You can get that over at therichlifeacademy.com. Last but not least, I always want to know, who do you guys want to hear me interview next? Let me know. Shoot me a text at 844-447-1555. With that being said, until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friend.